Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to today's program. I'm Neil Stavem. Glad to be along with you here in Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa's on the phones today, and we're going to have a great hour learning a lot. And Ted, I always appreciate the opportunity to learn about what God's doing around the world. And when it comes to God at work around the world, one of the places where things are really happening in significant ways is China.
Yeah, we don't hear much about that. I mean, we think of China, the church being underground there, and we're praying for our brothers and sisters in Christ there, but he's moving in mighty ways there.
Yeah, and of course, lots of changes going on in China, so we're going to find out about that. It's officially an atheist country. But its Protestant population has been swelling. In fact, they're anticipating huge growth in the next generation or so, and we want to find out about that. Actually, probably even less than that. But here to talk with us about that, today's guest, who has written a book called China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World. And I look forward to talking to Dr. Brent Fulton for some time. And we've chatted in the past, but happy to have him on with us here on Connecting Faith today. Brent Fulton is the president of China Source and the editor of the China Source Quarterly, which is a wonderful resource. And before the end of the program here, a couple times, we'll make sure that we give out a website just so you can get that connection, because you'll find it to be a very helpful resource and a way to just find out what God's doing, particularly in China, and how we can support the church there. Prior to his current position, he served as managing director of the Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College. He also served as the founding U.S. director of China Ministries International and as English publications editor for the Chinese Church Research Center in Hong Kong some years ago. And he's an avid China watcher, and he's taught and written extensively on the church in China and on Chinese social and political phenomena. And we are honored to have Dr. Brent Fulton with us here on Connecting Faith. Brent, good to talk to you again.
Neil, great to talk with you.
The book we want to reference is called China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World. And you and Louise Bush, and I put this together. Plus, it looks like it's a lot of kind of maybe a compilation of a lot of the work and research you've done over the years. But I want to start with one of the things that you introduced early on in the book, said everything is true somewhere at some time in China. That just reminds us, I guess, this is really a land of contradictions and complexity, isn't it?
It certainly is. Last week I was up at the YMCA camp in Estes Park, Colorado, a beautiful spot, and I was talking to a group of folks up there, and I started out by asking them, well, what have you heard about the church in China? And so they shared various things that they had heard through the news and through friends, and each time they shared something, I was able to say to them, that's right, yes, that's happening in China, because it is true. Probably whatever you've heard about the church in China is true. The problem is you can't extrapolate that across the country and generalize, say, well, because something's happening to the church in one place in China, therefore this must be the case across the country, because that simply is not the case.
And is it because the country is just so large and so populous that, there's so many different sort of aspects or ethnicities or whatever it might be?
People say there are probably many Chinas. If you look at the rural and urban diversity, you look at the ethnic diversity across various parts of the country, China is a very complex place, and so that's certainly part of it. Another factor is just China is ruled by people. They don't have real rule of law like we know in the United States, and so local officials from place to place can take a very different tact in how they deal with the church. And that results in some areas being relatively open and other areas being relatively tight. And that can change from place to place as officials change And as China goes through various political campaigns for one thing or the other. And so all of that contributes to the complexity and the diversity of what we experience in China.
So if it's not, if it doesn't have that sort of same rule of law, maybe structure like we do, talk about the, I guess, the legal and political structure of China. I mean, what, tell me about the country. Is it, just explain more about that.
Well, you have a Communist Party that is the sole ruling party in China. And then you have a Politburo at the top of that. And then at the top of the Politburo, and seven-member standing committee, basically a group of leaders who make the big decisions about how the country is going to be ruled. And then it's up to the party organizations at the provincial and the city levels to implement the policies of that come from the top. Well, the way in which those can get implemented can vary greatly from place to place, depending on the incentives to implement or not to implement, depending on how serious the center is really about the particular policy, and depending on the economic and social situation of a particular region. And so as you get lower down in the hierarchy, leaders at those levels can have quite a bit of clout in determining how policies are actually carried out. There's that old saying in Chinese, it's, you know, the emperor is far away and the mountains are high. And you know, basically what that means is oftentimes in a local situation, you'll find officials that kind of take matters into their own hands because they can get away with it.
So is there, I guess, in the sense of a communist country, I mean, you know that there's been amazing economic development there, and we can talk a little bit about that development, but is there an maybe a unifying principle or kind of something that really informs the direction of the government?
That's a really good question. China for thousands of years has had a core ideology, and for much of those thousands of years it was Confucianism. And then Mao came into power in 1949, and it was basically Marxist-Leninism and the worship of Mao. And so that was what held the whole country together. When Mao died in 1976, there was really nothing left. And so when Deng Xiaoping came into power in the late 70s and opened up China to the outside world and ushered in reform, he told the people to get rich is glorious. In other words, just focus on economic development and we'll be fine. And so for the last 30-plus years, the people of China have focused on economic development. But there has been no core ideology to really hold them together. And as China has developed economically, you know, the kind of the gold veneer is beginning to rub off, and people are realizing that there is more to life than simply making money. And they're also realizing that China is in a very bad state morally and ethically because there is no shared sense of what is right in the society.
We want to talk more about the moral and ethical challenges, but maybe just a bit more about the kind of the economics going in China. Obviously, they have become a dominant world power, right? I mean, the U.S. is beholden substantially to China. And so what happens to China really affects everybody around the globe, doesn't it?
That's certainly the case. It hasn't been the case even up till maybe 15 years ago, but it's certainly the case today that China is playing a major role in the world scene, particularly economically. And its economic tentacles have reached literally into every corner of the world. And so other countries are having to take China very seriously in terms of its economic impact.
Part of that that growth, I think, as I understand, happens or is driving a massive migration that perhaps is the largest in the globe or in history. Talk a little bit about what's happening in terms of urban and rural population in China.
Well, all the dynamics of change that we see in China today are really driven by one huge mega trend, and that is the urbanization. China is urbanizing at a rate and at a scale that no other country has experienced. And so, as you said, it is literally the largest human migration in the history of the world. Back in the early 90s, China was about one quarter urban, and everybody else lived in the countryside. And then today, it's over one half urban. That's a lot of people. It's over 275 million people moving in a very short period of time. And when it's all said and done, there will have been 350 million people moving from the countryside to the city. Given that China has a long, long history of being an agrarian, rural society, this obviously has huge implications for the culture and the society and for the church as well.
And I would assume that, I mean, issues of housing and, I mean, sanitation and maybe just training, education, all those things are part of this, right?
It's a pretty tall order for any mayor of any major city in China. And complicating that is the household registration system, or the hukou system in China, which since the 50s has drawn a very clear line between people who are allowed to live in the cities and people who are in the countryside. And so wherever your household registration is, that's where you get your medical care, your education for your children, your housing, et cetera. But now you've got these hundreds of millions of people moving into the city. They still have a rural household registration, but they need the services that the city can provide. And many city governments have been loath to provide those things, even though they really need the labor of these rural migrants who are coming in and literally building the cities of China. So it's created quite a social dilemma as to how to deal with the influx into the cities.
And are people moving to urban areas for jobs, or is it because there's they can't farm anymore? Or I mean, I assume that it's economics that's driving most of that, is it not?
It is economics. You need fewer and fewer people to do the work of agriculture as agriculture becomes more modern, and there simply isn't a future for a lot of these young people in the countryside. And so, meanwhile, the cities of China have been booming, even. The Olympics in China back in Beijing back in 2008 is a prime example. They had to build that huge bird's nest stadium and all the other buildings and infrastructure to accommodate the Olympics. Well, who built all that? It was the urban migrants. They couldn't have done it without them. And you could look at the Pudong area of Shanghai, which back in the 90s was rice paddies, and today is now the financial center of China. Same story. You couldn't have built that without the rural migrant labor. So they have played a very important role in the cities.
I've heard you use the terms push and pull when it comes to urbanization. Maybe just say a bit about those two words.
Well, the push is there's not a lot of future in the countryside, and so it's pushing the young people away in a sense. And the pull is the need for their labor in the cities. And the ability for them to make considerably more in the cities than they would had they stayed in the countryside.
Brent Fulton is president of China Source, editor of the China Source Quarterly, and he is my guest today. We're talking about the book that he and Louise Bush just recently completed called China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World. And we want to talk more in the moments ahead about the church in China, particularly. We want to get understanding about youth culture. That has some significant challenges there, not only about the tent-making outreach into China, but about the outreach of Christians from China into the West and the rest of the world. And we'll get to all that and more in just moments. By the way, if you've maybe been involved in some ministry opportunities in China, I'd love to have you join the conversation or maybe have a question about. You can call us right now at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Suggest that perhaps the awakening that's taken place in China over the past 20 or so years may be the greatest revival in history. But now that things have adjusted even further since the late 1970s. Where is China today? We're talking about China's next generation, new China, new church, new world. And we're welcoming to give us some insight today and teach us a bit. Dr. Brent Fulton, president of China Source. He served before that as a managing director of the Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College. He's been an avid China watcher over the years, taught extensively in the church in China and on Chinese social and political culture as well. We're getting some good insight today. One of the areas that China is certainly known for, I guess, is just technology. And I'm wondering, again, as we talked about China being sort of a country of contradictions, it seems like there are maybe some limitations and restrictions, and yet they're one of the world's producers of technology. Talk about the technology and media side of things.
Well, Neil, in terms of the church, that's one of the most surprising things that we've seen happening in China. China's internet usage has just gone through the roof in the last decade, and China now has more internet users than any other place in the world. And interestingly, as internet growth has really taken off, the number of people accessing the internet through their smartphones has also taken off. And so China really has been a world leader in terms of kind of bypassing several generations of technology and just going right to getting on the web through your smartphone. Well, for Christians, this has opened up an incredible window of opportunity to put up all kinds of Christian websites, church websites, worship websites, training websites. They're having wonderful conversations with each other on Weibo, which is the Chinese equivalent of Twitter. And so the online Christian community in China has really been quite surprising in the last few years.
Well, I guess given that, as you talk about some of these opportunities for Christians, let's talk about Christianity's growth and spread. I mean, as you said, just about everything you say about China has been true someplace, sometime. But is there more an increasing opportunity for the church to grow publicly and freely?
I think publicly is really a key word there. For many decades, the Chinese church was literally underground, and you often hear that term being applied to the church in China. But in the last couple of decades, particularly in the newer urban churches, which are not related either to the official church in China or to the more traditional rural house church movements, they have become increasingly public in their worship and in their activities. And I think a prime example of that was in 2008 when China had a terrible earthquake out in Sichuan province. Literally within days of that earthquake, there were believers coming from probably 25 different cities in China, heading to the earthquake site, bringing relief supplies, medical supplies, tents, and going there and staying there for quite a long time to help in the relief effort and the recovery effort after that earthquake. That was really the first time in recent history that the church had stood up spontaneously like that and said, here we are, we are Christians, and we're here to help the society.
Yet we hear reports to have, churches being torn down, those things as well. Does that tend to be more rural, or is it just isolated, or is there a pattern of still some persecution?
Well, there has certainly been cases of churches being torn down in a few places around China recently. Most of that has happened in one province, in Zhejiang province, where the government a couple of years ago instituted a campaign to get rid of illegally built buildings in an effort to kind of clean up the haphazard urban development that had been taking place across the province. Well, in one city, Wenzhou, there are a lot of believers. In fact, people have estimated that the Christian population of Wenzhou may be 10% of the population. And they had been building literally hundreds of churches. And some of these were built illegally. Some of these were built with the help of local officials who were sympathetic to the Christians. But when the provincial government came in and saw what was happening earlier this year, they were not happy with the prevalence of the church across that city and the very visible nature of the church. I mean, literally hundreds of crosses could be seen on church buildings across the city, and it's not really a huge city either. And so in this particular case, the provincial government has taken it upon themselves to lessen the visible presence of Christians in that city. Given the long-standing history of Christianity in Wenzhou, which goes back generations all the way back to China Inland Mission activity in that city, given the entrenched Christian influence on the culture in Wenzhou, they're not going to be able to get rid of Christianity in Wenzhou. They may pull down a bunch of crosses and demolish some buildings, but that's all that's going to do is cause the church to grow even more.
Well, the church has the opportunity to partner in what God's doing in advancing his kingdom around the globe, and I want to take a call. Ken is calling in from Minneapolis, and Ken has a question about, I think, probably international students. Hi, Ken. You're on with Brent Fulton. Go ahead.
Yes, what a privilege to talk to Brent. It's obvious he really knows his stuff, and we have the privilege of being involved in the ministry at the University of Minnesota through a hospitality center for Chinese, meeting them at the airport, helping them find housing, providing donated furniture, Bible studies, things of this nature. And I find that these people may be communists and atheists, but they're open to friendliness and hospitality to where many of them are coming to Christ. And to reach the future leaders of China, I think, you know, you don't have to learn a new language and travel across the world. They're coming right here. The mission field is right on our doorstep. And I know, I'm sure Wheaton College and other places have similar kind of sentiment. But what about this opportunity right here in our, on our doorstep?
It's a huge opportunity. And the way I would characterize it is this. China recently elected a new leader, Xi Jinping. And he will probably serve, he'll serve his five-year term, and then he'll probably be elected for another five-year term. And then when that's up, China will elect a new younger leader. I mean, not elect, they will choose a new younger leader. And there is a very big chance that that younger leader they choose will have been a graduate student at a university in the United States. And so the question I would ask is, when we get to that point, will we find out that that student had heard about the Lord when he was a student in the United States? I mean, when that new leader had heard about the Lord when he was a student in the United States? Or did he make it through an Ivy League school or a major university in the U.S. as a grad student and never even hear about Christ? I think that's the question we need to be asking.
And Ken, obviously, is others like him playing a part there with just the hospitality and outreach and doing some very practical, needful things and having a eternal impact. We're going to talk more about that and more. We get a call from Bill. We'll get to here just on the other side of this break. Just want to let you know that we're talking today with Brent Fulton, president of China Source, editor of the China Source Quarterly. And by the way, you can find out about that at their website, chinasource.org, chinasource.org. Brent has also served previous to this as managing director of the Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College. He's also founding U.S. director of China Ministries International, and is a China watcher. We're getting important insight on the on what's going on in China, particularly as it relates to the church. We've just touched on a couple things Brent mentioned a little bit ago about there's sort of a moral and ethical vacuum. We want to kind of circle back and talk a bit about that, particularly as it relates to youth culture and some of the challenges, unique challenges they face, on and more about maybe ways that we can pray and encourage and support the church in China. All that coming up. If you'd like to join the conversation, we welcome that. You can connect with us on email. It's myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page for an email link there. You can also find us on Facebook, Connecting Faith, there, and send us a note, or you can call us at 877-933-2484, and we'll continue in a moment.
Build your kingdom here, let the darkness fear, show your mighty hand, heal our streets and lands, set your church on fire, win this nation back, change the atmosphere, build your kingdom here, we pray.
Talking today about the church in China. China's Cultural Revolution ended in the late 1970s, followed by a 20-year-long spiritual harvest. And it was an awakening that many have called the greatest revival in history. And but now we're into the next decade and generation. And what will the church and China look like? And we're reflecting on that today. China's Next Generation is the book we're referencing from Brent Fulton. Dr. Brent Fulton is the president of China Source, editor of China Source Quarterly. And you can find out more about it online at chinasource.org. And Brent, I want to get to Bill's call. Bill had a question about cult issues in China. Bill, go ahead. You're on with Brent Fulton.
Yeah. Years ago, maybe about five or six, I was investigating. I ran across a Chinese cult called Eastern Lightning, and it was run by this female messiah that was capturing government officials and tens of thousands of Chinese. What's the latest update on Eastern Lightning? It made international news. I mean, you know, Time Magazine, you name it.
Sure.
Well, they've actually made the international news again not so long ago. A group of followers of that cult actually attacked somebody in a McDonald's up in northeast China and killed the person right there at the McDonald's. Wow. And so, and that did make the international news. It gives you a sense of just how vicious this cult is. They have not gone away. They've taken on a new name, which is the Almighty God sect. And their strategy has been to try to infiltrate the mostly the unregistered churches in China, the so-called house churches, passing themselves off as genuine believers and then getting in and basically stealing the sheep and pulling them into their cult using very aggressive tactics. They've also been known to kidnap church leaders and to attempt to brainwash them and pull them in. So they're still around. They're on the blacklist of the government, and so the government has moved in and tried to rein them in and arrest people that are associated with them when they find them. But they are still quite active.
Well, as Bill's question suggests, there are challenges right, in the church in China, as there are, of course, around the globe. But maybe are there some unique challenges that China has because the church has grown so fast? Talk about maybe the theological training and some of those issues.
Right. Well, there were no pastors formally trained in China from the 50s all the way up through the early 80s. And so there's literally a generation of pastoral leadership missing. The church exploded in terms of numbers from the 70s into the 80s and continues to grow today. And that growth has far outstripped the ability of leadership to keep up with it. So today you literally have pastors who are responsible for many congregations. I've heard even of house church pastors having to look over 100 congregations around their particular region. In the cities, you have a unique group of pastors. Many of them come out of a professional background, and they came to the Lord maybe within the last 5 or 10 years. So they have not been Christians for a really long time. They didn't grow up in a Christian home. And now they find themselves saddled with leadership of fellowships that have turned into churches of several hundred people. They may have had some formal training by going overseas or by getting some training online or maybe by being mentored by others within China. But they really are feeling their way forward, because as they look up to the previous generation to ask them, how did you do it? That previous generation literally does not exist. And so these urban house church leaders, or unregistered church leaders, we should say, are in a very vulnerable and very fragile position, even as they're in a wonderful position in terms of growing influence and opportunity to expand the kingdom in China's cities.
Well, I think maybe we kind of touched on it before, but it might be worth reviewing that. I think you've described the church in China sort of in three categories, right? With there's the house church, and then there's what, the three self church, but there's also this fast-growing urban church as well. Explain each of those.
Well, sure. It's hard to generalize about the church in China, just like the church in America. can be very diverse, but we can talk about three streams. And so one stream would be the traditional house churches that really trace their origins back to the early 1900s, when missionaries were beginning to move out of China, or at least change their role. And there were indigenous groups led by people like John Song and Watchman Nee, people who your listeners may be familiar with, and starting their own indigenous Chinese churches. Well, they reappeared, kind of the offshoots of those reappeared in the 60s and 70s when religion was outlawed completely in China, and people were meeting in homes in small groups. And then after Mao's death in 76, these groups really took off. They had a great evangelistic burden and literally sent missionaries from their churches all across China to plant churches. And so we saw a huge revival emanating from this rural house church movement. The second stream we could talk about would be the official church under the Three Self Patriotic Movement, which is an organization that was set up in the early 50s to kind of act as an interface between the church in China and the Communist Party. And that is the one official Christian presence in China. So technically, all the Christians in China ought to be under that umbrella. In reality, they're not. Most of them are found in the unregistered churches. But a lot is happening in the official church. They're able to print millions of Bibles every year. They're able to operate about 20 different Bible schools and seminaries across the country, training thousands of pastors. They've been able to open tens of thousands of churches across the country. And oftentimes people ask, well, is this registered church, is it really legit? Are they really Christians? And I would say, by and large, in any congregation you find across China, you'll probably find a pretty solidly evangelical pastor. And you would hear a pretty solidly evangelical sermon in those churches. The Bibles that are printed and distributed through the official church are the whole Bible. They're not doctored up in any way. And we find that these churches are pretty much able to preach about anything they want, as long as they don't directly get involved in politics. So there's, in spite of the control and the limitations, obvious limitations on the official church, there's a lot happening. Then the third stream we could talk about would be the emerging urban church. And this is a relatively new phenomenon. But as young people in the cities have found out about the Lord and have come to know Christ, maybe through having a Christian English teacher, or through going overseas for study and finding Christ and then coming back to China, or maybe hearing about the Lord through their employer, there has emerged a new movement in the cities of relatively well-educated, we would probably say middle-class people, most of them in their 30s or 40s or younger, and they've started a new kind of unregistered church, usually not affiliated with the traditional rural house church networks, not affiliated with the open church or the official church as well. And surprisingly, the government has pretty much allowed these groups to continue to meet without a lot of problems. There have been some crackdowns from place to place if they get too big or if they try to oppose the government directly in some way. But today, literally, you have congregations of several hundred people meeting in rented office facilities in major cities across China. And these are unregistered churches, but they're going strong. And there, I think, where we really see the church having an influence in the society, because the people in these churches are influencers. They're people in education, in media, in business, some of them even in government. And they have incredible opportunities to live out their faith.
Talking with Brent Fulton today, president of China Source, talking all things China. And we welcome your participation. If you have a question or a comment, maybe as you've heard some of our discussion, something's come to mind, or you've had opportunity to perhaps have a trip or do some tent making, and I'd like to just share a bit about that. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number, 877-933-2484, or you can connect via email. It's myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page for the email link. Going back to you talk about the urban church and this massive migration to the urban centers, millions of young people are there, but if they're, the motto is to get rich is glorious, if that has proved empty, as it probably will, talk about some of the moral and ethical vacuum that affects China today.
Well, it affects it in some very visible ways. Just one example would be all the food scandals that China has experienced in the last few decades. Most recent was when McDonald's in China and Hong Kong suddenly had to stop selling certain products because they realized that their supplier up in Shanghai had been sending them expired meat. And so those kinds of things have been happening across China. And I think the food scandals are just kind of a symptom of a deeper issue, which is trust in the society. People have, by and large, taken the tack that, well, if I can get away with it and if I can make money, well, then I'll do it. And it's led to all kinds of, food scandals, safety issues in all different sectors of the society, and really a society where people don't know who they can trust. It's led to widespread cheating on exams and a business atmosphere where corruption is just expected. It's just part of doing business in China.
So does the gospel is there a presentation of the gospel that seems to be particularly effective or a message that gets through maybe to those who are really searching for some answers?
I think the message is a message that there is a community where people can actually trust each other, and that's the church. And when people find believers who do what they do out of love for one another, even though they're not getting any visible benefit from it, even though they're not related in any way, but they're able to care for each other because of their bond in Christ, I think that speaks volumes to people. People are looking for that kind of a community because day in, day out, in the community they live in, they don't find that.
In a moment, I want to talk more with Dr. Brent Fulton, who is the president of China Source, and he edits the China Source Quarterly, and he's also served before this position as a managing director of Institute for Chinese Studies at Wheaton College, founding U.S. director of the China Ministries International, and he's an avid China watcher and given us some great insight today on that. We want to talk a little bit more about family in China, heard about the one-child policy, get some perspective on that. And we'll also talk about ways that the Chinese church is spreading across the globe, as even this migration taking place from rural to urban in China, there's also a great migration around the globe, and we'll hear more about that in a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, here's the number. It's 877-933-2484. Learning today about what God is doing in the church in China, through the church in China, and learning more about this important nation, an important key part of our globe. And we're getting good insight today from Brent Fulton, president of China Source, and we're talking about a book that he's written along with Louise Bush called China's Next Generation, New China, New Church, New World. We've heard, Brent, about the one-child policy, some of those things. Of course, it was, the 25th anniversary of Tiananmen Square earlier this year. Talk a little bit about what's going on in terms of family in China, and is that one-child policy affecting attitudes today?
It's affected them in a huge way. The Chinese traditional family has literally been turned on its head. Traditionally in China, you would have many children in the family who were able to work on the farm or run the family business. And then when the older parents and aunts and uncles grew older, there would be many children there to care for them in their older age. Today you have the opposite. You have families that have one child, and then you have multiple sets of aunts and uncles and the parents, the grandparents there. And the burden of caring for those older relatives is going to fall on the shoulders of that one child as the parents and grandparents and all get older. And so that has created a really serious situation in China and put incredible pressure on these children. So what's happened is that although this current generation of youth in China is probably the most privileged generation in the history of China in terms of access to education and material goods and such, they are one of the most unhappy generations. They are being pushed to study hard, to be able to take the university entrance exam when they get older, to be able to get a coveted position in university, and then hopefully out of that to get a good job, and then to be able to support the rest of the family once they get that good job. So there's just an incredible amount of pressure riding on them. And people have pointed out that because of the lack of siblings and also because of this test-taking culture that they exist in, really from kindergarten all the way up to high school, they're not developing in certain ways. They're not developing well socially. They're not developing well in terms of ability to think creatively, ability to take leadership, to take risks, ability to solve problems. And so they're, in some ways, their development is being curtailed in certain aspects. And because of the lack of interaction within the family, they're often quite lonely. And so they turn to internet chat rooms or gaming online as a way to somehow fill that void that they feel as a result of being rather lonely.
Which, again, sort of gets back to one of our callers earlier about the opportunity for us to, if they come to study in the States, and if we're near a college or university, we really have a key opportunity to make a friend and make an impact.
Well, today it's not even just college or university. There are 25,000 high school students from China in the United States today. And many of them are coming to Christian high schools because they value the culture within those high schools and the high academic standards. And parents feel maybe this is a safer place for my child to go. It's not uncommon now for middle-class parents in China to think about sending their children overseas, even for high school. And so this opens up an incredible opportunity to reach out to this generation. And in fact, the latest issue of the China Source Quarterly, which you can read on our website, dealt particularly with this issue of how Christian schools in the United States can effectively welcome these high schoolers when they come over from China.
Good word. The China Source Quarterly, you can find out more at chinasource.org. Brent Fulton is my guest. Brent, we're talking about there's not only this migration of urban from rural to urban in China, but there's been a huge migration outside of China as well. And I know that many of those are going to spread the gospel. Right? Talk about that.
Yeah, the migration out is rare, very unique in terms of China's history. But today you have kind of a few different streams. You have contract workers who are going to places like the Middle East or Africa to work on major projects. And there are millions of Chinese moving out in that way, or maybe as entrepreneurs to start small businesses in those parts of the world. And then you have the very, very rich in China, and among these would be not a few party officials who are parking family members and money in places like America and Australia and Canada and getting visas and getting passports to those places. And there's quite a migration among that group as well. But in terms of the church, there is a vision to be involved in world missions among Christians in China. And so they are seriously looking at how they can send people, maybe as tent makers, to places like Southeast Asia or Africa or other places like that, where they can have a skill and have a job, but also be there to share Christ. There are training centers being established within China, so people can be equipped to do that. Churches have the vision, but I think it's still going to be a long road for them to get to that point. Most believers in China don't have a lot of cross-cultural experience, and so they need to be equipped in that way. And they also don't have a lot of language experience, and so they need to learn how to learn a new language when they go to another part of the world. And churches, by and large, don't have a lot of experience in supporting workers that are sent out. And so the churches need to develop that vision and need to develop the support structures for that to happen. So all that to say is there is a huge vision, but oftentimes we hear about the vision and we assume that, oh, the Chinese church is sending out thousands of people around the world. Frankly, that's not happening yet. The numbers that have been sent out are probably in the hundreds, and there have been not a few stories of people that have gone out ill-prepared, and the results have not been good. So it's certainly a vision of the church, and it's certainly something we can be praying with our brothers and sisters in China for.
It seems like perhaps we can, as we pray for the church in China, we may also have some tent-making opportunities, right, as maybe English as a second language or some of those things.
Yeah, I think English continues to be a wonderful opportunity to teach in a university setting in China, or even to teach now in potentially a high school in China, or short-term be involved in an English camp, which there are many of those every summer around China. And so there are many opportunities to go over in that capacity. I think one of the overlooked opportunities is simply business. Any business, any major business in the world today is having to think about China. And most major companies in the United States are sending workers over to China in some capacity. And oftentimes when Christians get put into those roles because of their work with a company, they don't necessarily see it as an opportunity, as they could. I think we need to think more intentionally about the relationship between business and a Christian presence and witness in China. And in fact, in Minneapolis, there's an opportunity coming up in September to do just that. It's a IBAM Impact Conference, and it's for people who are looking at the relationship between business and witness in places like China. And they'll be able to meet people who've been successful in doing this, and really learn kind of learn the ropes and learn models of successful integration of business and witness.
I know Dwight Nordstrom, who we had on this program, will be a part of that, I think, as well. So
that's right.
Great opportunity for those in the area that is coming up on the 19th of September. We can tell you more about that as we go along. Brent, we just got a couple minutes left. Say a word about we talk about praying for the church in China. Are there some specific ways in which we can pray for believers in China?
Yes, there are a number of challenges we could look at, and I think all of these warrant prayer. One we've already talked about is the tremendous growth of the church, but not a sufficient growth of leadership. And so we need to be remembering, especially those urban church leaders in their 30s and 40s that are really on the cutting edge, but in many ways in a very fragile situation. Pray for those leaders in the cities as they encounter increased opportunities and opportunities to have an influence in their society, maybe by reaching out in the society, maybe through their workplaces, maybe even through publishing. That's becoming more and more of a potential opportunity in China. But how to effectively steward those opportunities? Also, as believers in China increasingly have access to wealth as China becomes a more prosperous nation, how to effectively steward those resources. Our brothers and sisters in China need wisdom in all of those things. And one of the reasons why they're struggling in those areas is simply a lack of role models, a lack of people to look up to see how they did it so they know how to do those things in China. And so pray for that the Lord would raise up good role models for Christians in China, particularly for youth in China. And then a couple challenges that the church faces today. One is materialism. As China has become a more prosperous nation, the issues facing the church have changed. And one of the big issues that pastors point to today is simply that a love of money, a desire to accumulate more, the whole consumer mindset is potentially leading people away from the gospel. And so we need to pray against that. And then for unity, as things have kind of loosened up in China in many ways, Christians have more opportunities to develop different kinds of ministries, but there is a potential that instead of working together more, which they do have an opportunity to do, they might begin to splinter more and go off into different camps. And then, of course, we still have the issue of the official church versus the unofficial church in China and the division that exists there. You know, Jesus said people will know that we're his disciples by our love for one another and by our unity. And so we need to be praying that brothers and sisters in China would value that and would take steps to preserve their unity with one another.
Good insight. It's been a great hour. Dr. Brent Fulton joining me today, president of China Source and the editor of China Source Quarterly. Find out more about the writing and the work that they're doing at the website chinasource.org. Brent, good to connect with you. Thank you for giving us this really insightful discussion today.
Neil, thanks for this time together.
Brent Fulton joining us today from China Source. Check it out, chinasource.org. If you missed part of the program, want to pass it on to a friend, check out the podcast at myfaithradio.com.